Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hi, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our show, Pioneer Radio listeners. Tonight, we have something very interesting, a unique experiment. We are going to present an outtake, a program that is being edited for our syndicated radio show in the States. And you'll be able to hear all of the program without the edits. I think you'll find it interesting. There'll be a little bit of the rattling of the microphone and maybe some off-side comments. So just overlook those, because I think you'll find the show very interesting. We're talking with Wes Bateman, a man behind many of the ideas for Star Trek. So stay tuned. I think you'll like the show.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Pippin with the UFO Files, and we broadcast from lots of places, but this is the first for any network radio show, I think. We're broadcasting from Dolan Springs, Arizona, which is on the way to Hoover Dam. And it's a pretty interesting place because a very interesting fellow lives here. And I'd like to introduce everybody to Wes Bateman. How are you?
I guess fine, Jerry.
I know that we're going to discuss several things on our broadcast today. But the first thing I think people need to know is that you've been doing this ufology and research in this much more in depth than almost anybody I know for a long time.
Yes, since actually in the mid-1960s we got involved with the subject of UFOs. And have continued to this day, keeping mainly a low profile, not really getting out into the public to any great extent.
You know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit right up front. A lot of people probably don't recognize your name because you said you had a low profile, and that's true. But if I've ever watched Star Trek, some of those things that they use actually came from lectures they saw you give.
That's right. And in the 60s, prior to the creation of the first Star Trek, we had a foundation called the Mind Research Foundation in Hollywood. And it was at that time that Gene Roddenberry was looking for stories for Star Trek. And he asked permission for his writers to sit in on lectures and so forth. And later, things were getting even tougher for them. Gene Kuhn took over the production of Star Trek, and we met quite a few times. But Gene Roddenberry was looking to others, you know, not only us. He spoke to such people who were active in the field at that time, such as George Van Tassel and Gabriel Green and so forth. But a good feeling to see that it was a successful show. And of course, that the sequels and the kept going on and on. And
you know, one of the things that immediately I think about is the Prime Directive. And that's kind of a concept that you feel is based on truth.
That's right. It was Gene Kuhn who actually hung on to that particular the subject of the Prime Directive, and that's why there is little contact with people or interference with the way that a particular culture is developing on a world. And that is definitely something that applies to the present UFO phenomenon and how the extraterrestrials are dealing with this world. And it goes a little bit further beyond the extraterrestrials coming up with this idea of not interfering. This goes even to into their religious beliefs. It's something that goes beyond the extraterrestrials themselves.
You know, one of the things about that, you bring up that subject, Wes, and I've been doing broadcasts for this for many, many years, but the more I do it, the more I realize that the spiritual element is there.
That's right. To understand that, we must understand what's actually going on this planet. Why would they come here? Why are they bothering with what is happening here? The UFO subject had, as I said earlier in our preliminary conversation, there is no real mystery to it anymore. The answers to just about everything, cattle mutilation, abductions, why they are arrive at certain times in patterns, in where they're located, they can be predicted. In fact, a high-speed infrared film has been taken of UFOs because those that photographed them nonchalantly went up, set up their tripods, and just had to wait a few minutes and start rolling film. And the whole thing is based upon today in our technology, we could map and analyze another planet in one mission that would take us about 5 days if we only could get the equipment we have available to that planet. But UFOs have been with us for thousands of years. Certainly, they'd be through analyzing and mapping this world. Well, the answer is very simple. They're observing something that is constantly changing, something that we have not been aware of. And this condition has a lot to do with us in the sense that we are not evolving as a species. We are re-evolving.
Re-evolving. I like that. Explain that a little bit.
All right. We can imagine that what they're saying today is a dinosaur is turning into a bird. All right. That's where birds came from. They look at the anatomy of the way the legs are constructed biologically, and they say, my God, it looked just like dinosaur legs. Well, there's some fossils that you look at that shows a feathered reptile, but are we looking at something going from a reptile to a bird, or are we looking at something that was a bird going to a reptile and now is re-evolving, coming back to what it originally was? In other words, what we call forbidden archaeology, there's a great deal of evidence of strange things found in strata layers that are millions and millions of years old.
For example, you mean like something is in a fossil that shouldn't be there, like maybe a bracelet or a necklace or something?
That's correct, and you hit it right on the head. There are chalk beds in both England and France. They have found a gold jewelry that was definitely worked by an intelligence, and these chalk beds are millions of years old. There are tile floors that have been have a pattern that were found in millions of year old stratas in Montana. Different type of machined objects found in coal mines in Hungary, or machine screws found in anthracite coal in Pennsylvania. Now, this is a very long time ago, and I know it's hard for people to my goodness, what happened? Well, the Earth suffered a geological catastrophe millions of years ago. And as we understand it, prior to that time, people were living on this planet who had a great many abilities that became lost to us, but now we're recovering them. We might say they were using all of their mental faculties. Consequently, when this event occurred, the Earth's core went into a very terrible hot oscillation. And the core sends off random harmonics, which are not harmonious to the way that our brains operate. So we don't use all of our mental faculties. We just don't. But you have to trust you to do.
You know, go ahead.
Okay, consequently, they can't tolerate this condition. Where we can, because we're like, say, tempered or familiarized with it. But they've been observing it. And how they've been observing it is by observing earthquakes and volcanic eruptions.
The interesting thing about volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, you have a theory, and I guess it's really more than a theory, that that's somehow related to ET site, UFO site.
That's correct. Going back in the newspapers during the times that UFO sightings were being reported in the newspapers.
Quite a lot of our newer listeners don't really believe that, but I remember seeing pictures of flying saucers over the nation's capital in my local paper back in Muskogee, Oklahoma in 1952.
Absolutely. I can remember the occasion where Al Chop, the fellow that was known as the voice of Mercury Control, he read a book of that, and I have seen the pictures, the radar pictures, where it shows a jet chasing them, and the saucers would disappear. As soon as the jet went back to its base, they came back. It was quite a stir in those days. But the main thing is that I recall one particular occasion where in 1965, I think it was March of 1965, where UFOs were seen over Hillsdale in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that was the time that the Air Force dismissed those sightings as swamp gas, if you recall.
Yeah, they still use that explanation occasionally.
Right. Well, the Los Angeles Herald Examiner couldn't make up their mind what they were going to use as a headline. The giant earthquakes that took place in China, or the Hillsdale Ann Arbor sightings. So they used both. And if you, those that are familiar, know that with earthquakes, are probably also familiar with the fact that earthquakes generate what are called push and shear waves, or simply push and TNS waves. And they radiate out from a quake in such a way that they penetrate the Earth, bounce off the molten core of the planet, and come out at a 7,000-mile surface distance from where the earthquake took place. It is at those locations that your UFO sightings take place. Other waves that pass through the core come out at 9,500 miles. Now, the difference between the two is called a quiet zone. There's no activity there. You can go back, there's so many. If you go through the more, within the UFO activity is usually in anywhere from 3 days before a good-sized quake to 3 days after a quake, if it's an earthquake they're interested in. And
So basically you're saying which comes first, the earthquake or the UFOs?
Well, they're able to predict when they're going to happen. And that's something that our science is trying to do, of course, to be warning people, the Chinese, that take the activity of farm animals very seriously. I think it was I can't remember exactly which city, but they moved 2 million people out of a city just because some horse was running around crazy in the stall, and the earthquake occurred. Now, snakes will come out of their hibernation holes and freeze to death on the ice because the earthquakes are coming. Bears will leave their hibernation early, such as the Good Friday earthquake in the early up in Alaska. They say, well, the bears are out early. Yeah, well, the bears got up because they didn't want to be buried in their dens or whatever. And I think animals in zoos become very upset prior to earthquakes. Bullfrogs, female frogs will croak and swim in, they normally swim in one direction, if counterclockwise, clockwise, but when the earthquakes are going to come off, they go in a completely opposite, the females also start croaking. So I can go on with that. Japanese fishermen know there's going to be an earthquake because the small sea life comes off the bottom of the sea. The fish start eating more and they get a bigger fish catch. So we can go on and on about those things. But the key thing here is that the extraterrestrials are interested in earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and nuclear bomb detonation. Why nuclear bomb detonation? Not because they're afraid of us and our nuclear weapons. They are only have to take these into consideration because it involves their thousands of years study on, you know, because Earth, the nuclear weapons produce the same types of waves that earthquakes do. That's it. Now, why are they doing that? Well, the Earth's core is vibrating, as I said, and is cutting down on causing us to not use all of our mental faculties. They're reading these waves because if there's a crack, the waves travel slower. If that crack has gone back together to every degree, then it moves faster through the waves move faster through the material. And they're looking for an eventual time when the Earth will be totally healed of its cracks and the Earth's core will be vibrating again in what would be considered natural. And
so basically, you're saying that the Earth's core is not nearly even close to 50% yet. And its harmonic vibrations, or whatever you'd like to refer to it as. I'm a layman, and I'm not sure scientifically what you refer to that as.
No, it is quite close to a correction, and I don't know why because we look at the way we're progressing. Last 100 years, how much our technology has improved and so forth. And our children are becoming smarter. They are. So I believe that in the very near future, I won't put time date on it. My goodness, this has been going on for millions of years. And the extraterrestrials realized that they've been putting time and effort into studying this phenomenon for thousands of years. So, but we are getting there. There's evidence of their interest, more of an interest to us at this time, because they have sent messages. 9 messages were received by way of telescopic radio telescopes.
Are we talking about the SETI project?
Well, it's hard to tell because the information how I found it was I linked from the SETI website to another website where these messages were on as a game. A fellow took credit and said, well, let's see if we can't play with this and come up with how these messages are written. And his reason for doing this was so that we would be prepared to what would we have to do to answer, to translate a real message together. Well, that proved to be baloney, because what they are, these 9 messages are real. And what they relate to is it's simply amazing. You don't have to be a genius to read them if you have a certain basic understanding of a system called the Roth system of mathematics, which was used in the construction of the Great Pyramid. The second and third pyramids of Giza, Teotihuacan, Mexico, Palenque, and also there's evidence of the use of this on at the place called Cydonia, the plain on the planet Mars. Now, this system, we call it the Ra system because our understanding of it came from studying the Great Pyramid. And that research began in the 1975, and has gone on to this day. And then when the became aware of the messages, there are certain things about the messages that just stood right out. For instance, that there was a 19 tones in the first message and 18 in the second message, which total 37. Where there's a table in the Ra system, which are called the Ra Table of Nines, and there are 37 numbers in the Ra Table of Nines. So this is the first thing. And the people said that the tones were actually the duration of each tone was 0.492 seconds. Well, I said, okay, let's take a look at this. Now, their first section of the first message reads, they used letters to begin with till they ran out of letters and start using every other symbol on the keyboard until eventually they reached 82 tones. But it's really only 81 active tones. That's 9 times 9. And the 82nd tone, which is actually the 7th tone, which is their G, are used as extending the length of the message or extending or separating the actual data, one set of data from the next.
Kind of a interstellar dash.
Yeah. Well, the G is the seventh letter of the alphabet, and what it really stands for is the seventh period to the periodic table of elements. If you look at the Grand Gallery of the Great Pyramid, you've got seven ceilings and 37 overlapping stones, which means that 37 represents electron movement in the seven electron shells, K to Q. Okay. Now, coming back to the messages, the first section of the first message tells you immediately that these guys that are saying they made up this game are just full of it. Because what you got is G, V, G, all right? B is the second letter of the alphabet. It would be where that would be represented by the number 54. Because you have 27, 54, 81, 108, 135. In other words, multiples of the number 9. So we have 54. Just take their 0.492 and divide it into 54, and they're busted. Because what you get is a number very close to what is called the Rydberg constant for hydrogen. So get a little correction here, and you end up with their 0.492 actually becomes 0.492075. Divided into 54, it's a Rydberg constant. Rydberg constant used in mathematical equations to determine the wavelength of the spectral line for hydrogen from infrared to ultraviolet. So I'll leave it there with that because it's a lot more complicated. But what we're getting is circles, squares, spheres, and relationships to what are called the various physical constants, such as charge to mass constant, permeability constant, which is otherwise known as the constant for magnetism in free space, the permittivity constant, which is the electrical field in free space. It just goes on and on. But they're really telling us something here. The way it looks, even after all this time, we got so much data out of the first 7 seconds of the messages, and we've been working on it for a year or more. So
can you give us an idea of what this first message, a little bit that you've been able to decipher, what is it about?
What it is, it's talking about gravity. We never quite understood gravity, but Einstein said that when we understood gravity, he was real sure that we were going to find that magnetism and gravity are the manifestation of the same thing. Right, because this is what we are finding these things out. We have got all of these constants that are expressed in what we call raw terms. You have to understand, we take like the meters, grams, and seconds, and convert them to what we call rams, okay, raw meters, grams, and natural seconds. Okay, now you heard the raw music, that's based on natural second of time. So in doing that, for all I know, what they're saying is the unified field theory that Einstein was working on, I think the first 7 seconds of this message had given us that. There's a lot, as I say, you don't have to be a genius to read it. You know, we got the lyrics. We're still looking for the right tune. You understand? It takes people that are, of course, are specialized in certain fields that have to take a look at this thing.
Wes, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but is this somewhat like a scientific holy grail or something?
It most definitely is. It is. It's hard to tell. We have 9 messages here. Okay, again, 81 phones, 9 messages. And some of these, we are at section 8 of message 1, which is 45 sections. I think that message 3 has 1,500 different tone characters in different combinations. They were right to, these people that were trying to con people into doing their work for them, they were right to say, gee, we sure like to know how this was written. We have found that the numbers or the tones are in such a way that you have to pair them up. Anything that matches, you double. Anything that's left over is considered a applying a number or a divider. So we have 2 kinds we have found already. It's called, we call one type of the seesaw and the other the mirror. And it is from these that we've been able to find these various constants. And we're finding that these constants in the NGS system are not compatible to each other. Well, we can understand, because it's the way things are measured, do you understand, where they can affect the measuring equipment. Where this seems to be coming from is from something that it moves me to say this, if I might, and that is, it is the mathematical language that nature uses to describe itself. Okay?